Welcome to episode 24 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight we are covering the final short trek before season two of Discovery. And it is titled The Escape Artist. So before we get started, we have some feedback from the previous three short treks, which I'm not surprised about because, you know, we did those all in one night. So let's open hailing frequencies. Okay, so Ruthie, you've got it started with one for Runaway.
Okay, Mike in Cleveland says, in the Star Trek Discovery short podcast, there was a discussion on the five shifts on the Discovery, with many thinking there was some kind of mistake or misunderstanding, but the show is correct. As a United States Navy veteran, I can tell you when a ship is at sea, most personnel in engineering are on a five-shift rotation for every 24-hour day. It consists of 4 5-hour watches and 1 4-hour watch, usually from, how do you say that? Oh,
midnight?
Yeah, it's midnight. It's 0400 to 0400, I guess. They call. I don't know how you say 0000.
I don't either.
It's midnight. I think it's 0000. I don't know. 0 hour, I think is what they call it.
The witching hour?
No, I don't think that's the witching hour. I think the witching hour is at like 1 o'clock or something in the morning. But anyway, 0000 to 0400 called the midwatch. We called this rotation five and dimes. Huh. You stand a 5 hour watch, complete a 10-hour workday, then stand another 5-hour watch. This allows for the ship to operate at peak efficiency for 24 hours. In my 8 years of service on 3 different ships, we always had this rotation system, and I believe Star Trek Discovery was just following that example. And of course they are, because the Starfleet follows naval everything. So,
yeah, I had no idea.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it. I had no idea either.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It didn't even occur to me to have like the fifth shift be shorter than the other four, but that shows how much military that I have. And for that matter, James Robbins, who we've heard a lot from over the course of the podcast. Hi, James. He also chimes in to say something similar. He says, hey guys, glad to hear you again. Well, glad to be back. I tell you, for this season two, I am so excited. I can't even like contain it. But anyway, he says, just wanted to point out one minor thing at the end. You guys were talking about that whole 5 or 6 shift thing and being retired Navy. And Starfleet being steeped in national tradition, I have a little experience with this. And yes, you can have 5 shifts or sections. What she's referring to here is definitely a watch rotation. Tilly's watch was probably a roving security watch, and I'm 99.9% sure that it was, how do you say that? Is it Reveille? Is that it? Reveille? You're muted. There.
It depends. Are you saying it the French way or bastardization of French?
the bastardization of French.
I don't know how you say it.
I think it is.
Sure.
Okay. I'm thinking of the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. I think they say when he plays Reveille. I don't know.
Okay.
Very old song. But anyway, I'm 99.9% sure it was a Reveille, which is what we called the watch prior to everyone waking for the day. And I probably got that wrong, so I assume that I'll get a response back. next time. But anyway, this is why there's no one else really up and about during her interactions between Poe and herself. The only other crew that would be up and about are other watchstanders. The reason I say there can be five sections is because it doesn't necessarily have to be even shifts. As Mike said earlier, corroborating that, this comes up a lot on the smaller ships like destroyers in today's Navy as well. To get more off time, you would have four sections doing 5-hour watches and one section doing a 4-hour watch. I think I've heard this before. Every day, the watch rotation would change as well, so everyone would get the opportunity to stand a short watch. Interesting. Just thought this might help clear that little tidbit up while giving a little peek into nautical life. Well, thanks, James, and thanks, Mike, before him. Now, I asked him, because James posted that in the Facebook group, so I asked him directly. I said, well, okay, we already had someone else say the same thing about the five shifts. Is six shifts something possible? And he responded back. He said, depends on the ship, really. A six-watch rotation can definitely be utilized on some of the larger and heavier hand vessels like carriers. I was a destroyer guy myself. We were always severely undermanned, so six wasn't possible. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That is definitely very interesting information, guys. I appreciate it because I totally forgot about the whole naval thing. And I don't personally have any experience with Navy stuff except for what I see on The Last Ship.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't have any experience myself either. I've liked James' here response about how they would rotate. So that also kind of explains something I was curious about when this came up, because I thought, well, how does that work exactly? So the one question that I had with that, do the shifts overlap? I wonder, like, that was the one thing that I had thought about with a six shift rotation. You'd have like half that would continue working and half that would be off. That was a thought that I had, not necessarily that they would do that. But so is there like a clean cut after each shift? You can let us know. As you can see, I'm not too well versed in this. The other is Ruthie. We got one more. Ruthie, you want to give that one?
Yep. Clint says, just reactivated my CBS All Access account, and this first short trek was really boring. As a standalone story, it lacked anything interesting and of value. If it will be connected to the upcoming season and is set to a story plot, then it may be worth the 15 minutes it took to watch it. 3 out of 10 bowls of ice cream. Ouch.
Ouch, definitely. You know, I thought of this after we recorded, and I thought, I didn't say this, and I meant to, but when she beams Poe over at the end, where did she beam her to? Had they arrived at her planet? And, you know, where did, and how come she was able to do that with nobody around? Was it still that same shift that nobody was around on? But like, where were they that, because we don't see another ship, we don't see a planet. So did she get spaced?
Ha ha ha. I highly doubt that since she's the next ruler.
Yeah.
I think she, I'm pretty sure Tilly said something about heading off to her planet or meeting up with somebody.
Yeah.
Or something. So,
I mean, I'm thinking.
And I'm sure all that happened during the same shift. I mean, she snuck on somewhere, so it's not like they were that far away from.
Yeah.
I'm sure all she had to do was turn around.
Yeah. It does make sense if it was, you know, this like sparsely populated shift that. That she could have gotten away with it, I guess.
Yeah. But. What did you call that? The midwatch.
What was it? Midwatch.
That's what he said. The 0-100 to 0-400 called the midwatch.
Midwatch.
So, yeah.
All right. We also got a couple of pieces of feedback from Clint on the other two short tracks. So, and we were the only, he was the only one to respond to the second and the third. But for Calypso, I'll give his. He says he didn't like that one either. He says, about as boring as the first short. Nothing really accomplished in the story other than the actor eating a lot of food. We'll see if there is any connections with season two. 3 out of 10 waffles. Ouch.
And yeah, ouch. Dang. That's so funny because I like those two best out of the first three.
And he also gives feedback on The Brightest Star. Why don't you read that one?
Okay. For The Brightest Star, Clint says, finally, a decent story. Some backstory on Saru that works, even if there is no direct connection to season two. And it helps explain why his species hasn't been seen in any other series. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, that it does. It definitely does.
No, he's like Data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for not at all.
Except for not. Not even a little. I still want to know if they named the Kelpians because of the kelp. I really do. But all right, so let's move on to the fourth and final short track before season two. And I've been saying it this way. I'll just give a little bit of a news item here. It was announced today that there are more short treks to come. So we will get some at the end of the season. I don't know if they'll be right at the end, but they are going to be animated. So I don't know if it's going to be from the, you know, same creators that are making the Lower Decks series, but apparently these are going to be animated. So for this one, it is written by the creator of Lower Decks, as I said, and writer and producer on Rick and Morty, Michael McMahon, and directed by, boy, he had a lot to do this episode, Rainn Wilson. And the description that, you know, the first three I got off of Wikipedia, and I found that the description on Wikipedia for this episode is sorely lacking. So I actually got a better one from CBS. And it is Harry Mudd, Rainn Wilson, back to his old tricks of stealing and double dealing, finds himself in a precarious position aboard a hostile ship, just in time to try out his latest con. And I was surprised, one thing I did not realize from the short itself, apparently it was rated TVMA, which is like, you know, the strongest rating, and it also for language, which I think there might have been one S word in there, but it's like, what? Why would it have been TVMA? Was there just the sauciness of Harry Mudd and the fact that he's kind of a racially insensitive guy?
That's probably the best bet. Otherwise, I have no idea.
All right. So what did you think of The Escape Artist?
I liked it. I thought it was funny. And it was really, to me, it was really in the vein of the other episodes that we've had Harry Mudd on. And I don't know, I enjoy the character. I think Rainn Wilson does a pretty good job being a scoundrel, scallywag, blackguard.
Well, I'll say if I had to rate this show, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
That was funny.
Yeah, so I would give it 9.5.
Delicious jipper.
Yes, 9.5 delicious jippers. So I also thought of calling it polished tusks, but I thought that was kind of gross. All right.
Or slightly used cudgels, or what did he say?
Gently used cudgels. Slightly used cudgels.
Oh, that was hilarious. Or cross-dressing Harry Mudd's.
Well, anyway, it's difficult to say which one I liked better. I think Calypso, which I gave a 9, was probably about even with the Brightest Star. And this one, I don't know. I think if I have to like rank them, I think I'm going to have to rank this one to be my favorite, because it had such a like payoff, such a great payoff. The last 3 minutes of the episode was so good that I just, you know, so, and I have to say that ever since we're recording this on Tuesday night and it came out on Thursday, and, I would have to say that ever since I watched it, I've had Sipping Jippers on a Beach Somewhere in my head. And that's, of course, because...
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
I'll kill it there, but yeah, I mean, it goes on.
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
I know. When they did that, reveal, I was like, oh my gosh, he is selling himself to bounty hunters. Oh man.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
It was.
Although I must say, initially, I thought that he was just working with the tall lady bounty hunter. I didn't think that he was the tall lady bounty hunter until they it was probably like a couple of minutes before the actual reveal. I was like, oh, that's him. He's under there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So I guess going into the yeses.
Yes.
What can be said about Rainn Wilson and this? I mean, he was so amazing in this episode. Like acting, directing, he made this episode, and I don't know what else you can say about it, but he was amazing.
He was doing the most for sure.
But it's just like his timing and he knocked this out of the park. I know they do give Emmys for shorts, because I know like Walking Dead's been Fear have been nominated for those. If the short treks are getting nominated for those, short web, whatever, I would say that this one should be the one that's nominated, because he did such an amazing job. You have anything to highlight?
I liked the when he kept like it kept showing little snippets from his past when he's like, I've never been in this situation before, and then it would cut to some time when he was trying to swindle some other poor soul.
Well, that's the funny thing, though. Was it his past, or was it just the other androids getting caught? Because you look at it, and the examples that they show, we see the same clothing on those androids. So it could have been his past, like especially the Klingon one, but it could have also been one of the other androids getting into that situation.
Definitely true. I guess I kind of thought that it sounded like it was definitely him.
Well,
into all those scrapes.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been either way. That's the beauty of it too.
Yeah,
it could have been a mixture, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I'll tell you one that I want to highlight is it was something that he didn't say. I don't know what species she was, but the smaller bounty hunter, she says, I am up. What's up?
The short chick.
I didn't want to say that, but yes. She said, I am of normal height. It is not my problem. You're freakishly weak.
No, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I just made me laugh so much, because I I don't know. They're just, it just tickled me to death. There was something about the way that you just can imagine him driving so many people crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just want to shoot you.
Makes you wonder what Stella sees in him.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Who knows?
Maybe she's the one person that
can actually put up with his crap.
She would drive anyone crazier more than he would.
Yeah, could be. Could be. I don't know. Does she have like an annoying voice or something?
Harcourt?
Yeah. Or an annoying laugh like Janice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez. What's that from?
Friends!
Okay. I should.
Oh, my God. Oh, I can't believe, I mean, hang on a second. I have to, I'm sure I can find a clip or something of Janice laughing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep. That's the kind of person who would put up with Harry Mudd.
All right. Do you have any other anything else you want to highlight, or should we move to the nose?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't know. Pretty much the whole thing just kind of tickled me. I was like, yeah. It was just so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have much to say in the nose, but I will play it.
No!
The only thing I can think of that would be a no would be that, and it had to do with the short bounty hunter. She loses her ship. Like, couldn't she have just, like, called her ship?
I thought that was hysterical.
It was hysterical, but it was one of those things after a while. It's like, you know, oh, why did this happen exactly? Of course, you know, Harry Mudd would drive anyone crazy, as we talked about. So I guess that would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, maybe she couldn't find it because he was so distracting and driving her to not be able to think straight or something. It was funny, though. I can't remember what she said when she said, he was like, what kind of bounty hunter loses his ship? And she was like, the kind who something. What did she say? The kind who's going to.
I don't remember.
Kind who's going to kick your ass or something. I can't remember what she said. It was something like that. That's funny. Let's see if I can find it real quick. The green slave girl ladies or whatever. That was also hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, when he rips his arm out of the socket. Oh. He's like, ah!
Yeah.
And of course you see in the background, there's another guy with no arm. How many times did he get his arm ripped off? Oh, that was really funny.
It's kind of funny too that they all start the stupid chippers on a beach.
Chippers on a beach. Dipping chippers on a beach. Oh, I found it.
What are you looking for?
None of your concern.
Have you lost track of your ship? Maybe if you were a little taller, you wouldn't get lost so often.
I know exactly where I am at all times.
What kind of bounty hunter loses her ship?
The kind who would never be in a partnership with you.
All right.
The kind who would never be in a partnership with you. Oh, that I thought that was, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. The whole thing was funny.
The whole thing was funny. Yeah. That's why I say, like, he really knocked it out of the park. He took an episode that I know a lot of people weren't necessarily anticipating, and I think that this one seems to be pretty much universally loved. So I haven't
seen. What are you talking about? He took an episode that what?
A lot of people weren't really looking forward to the Mud short trek, but he really, I think, hit this one out of the park. So.
I agree with that.
All right. So like we said, we really don't have much as far as the nose. And that one's even kind of, you know, weak. Stretching it, yeah. But I will have a hold your horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
I'll never get tired of that. So all of the androids, I said one here, but it's actually going back. All of the androids that were wearing costumes that we saw in the flashback, you know, so they were wearing the same clothes, or at least they looked to be the same. But one of them was wearing a garb very similar to what he wore in iMUD, which is kind of funny because that episode from TOS had, you know, the androids. So it kind of fit very well with this one. So I guess it was kind of like an origin story. Although some people thought maybe this happened after that. I doubt it, but maybe. Maybe that's where he learned it. I don't know. And if that's the case, then we have the same uniforms going in, crossing into, you know. Anyway. So the other thing that I saw this brought up in a few other, oh, sorry, I didn't say it. Well, you know what? Actually, Fred from the Netherlands goes into more detail about that. So I won't repeat that, but I did notice it as well. The other thing that I heard on other podcasts, though, was the female bounty hunter costume. Some people thought that maybe this was a take on the Breen. I don't think so. In fact, I went back and looked at pictures of the Breen from, you know, DS9, and I don't think that the bounty hunter garb was a Breen. I mean, we know that he likes helmets, and we actually see that Andorian helmet that he used in Magic to make the sanest man go mad in there. We also see a Mona Lisa. Did you see the Mona Lisa?
I feel like I remember that a little bit. Maybe. I think maybe I did.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Possibly. Anyway, so some people thought that was the Breen. I don't think so, but, you know, it was a similar kind of costume. Kind of like steampunk version. Because it had like studs and things like that on it. But anyway, all right. So let's go back to feedback and open hailing frequencies again. Okay. So Clint, he has feedback for this one as well. He says, I give the escape artist 9.5 cudgels out of 10. Easily the most entertaining of the four Trek shorts. And I would generally agree. I thought they got better as they went, but I think this one I have to rate the highest. All right, next.
Yeah, I think this one was definitely the most humorous, but I mean, I guess entertainment, if you're talking about strictly entertainment value, then yeah, it was probably the most entertaining. But I enjoyed most of the others. I didn't really like the Brightest Star as much, but
yeah,
they were at least thought provoking, which, like, is,
I think, the Brightest
Star Trek does well.
The Brightest Star, I think, is the one that is probably going to play most into season two. I don't know how Calypso is going to play into it, if at all. It might play into the end of Discovery or something, where it goes off into the sunset and then we, so to speak, and you know, told to given orders to, which, by the way, how do you give orders to a starship?
Tell the computer, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, for that matter, maybe it had sentience when it was given the order. I don't know, but anyway.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
The computer, they just said, computer.
Hello, computer.
Lock down the ship. Yeah. Hello, computer.
Yeah.
This is my mouse.
Ah, hello, a keyboard. How quaint.
Oh, that's my favorite computer.
Yeah. He picks up the mouse. Yeah, so anyway.
All right.
Next.
Okay. James. James tells us, while not a fan of The Brightest Star due to it being just too much to explore and creating more questions than answers, I loved The Escape Artist. To me, this is how a short trek should be. A one-off story that is told pretty completely without having a bunch of loose ends that need to be tied later. Just a ship in a bottle episode that was entertaining. Mudd was hilarious and Rainn Wilson showed he could direct and act. I also wonder, is the female bounty hunter attire he is wearing possibly a reimagining of the Breen attire? The language sounded strongly similar, and to me, it had that type of style. I know I said I wouldn't give ratings for shorts, but if I did, it would get 10 jippers on a beach somewhere. Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach. Money, I'd be sipping jippers on a
beach. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
Delicious jipper.
All right.
Oh, gosh. Delicious jipper.
Delicious jipper. And by the way, I know you don't drink, Ruthie, but I've been asking around, what is a jipper? And I think it is a made-up drink, but my prediction is before the season's out, someone will have made a jipper and it'll make it to the bar scene. All right. Well, our next bit of feedback is from Fred from the Netherlands. He says, I disagree with James Robbins because I liked The Brightest Star considerably better than this muddy episode. Ha ha ha. Muddy episode, he says.
Yeah.
Possibly I'm biased by the fact that I was at the filming site of The Brightest Star 1.5 years ago and possibly about a half year before it was filmed. Bluffs Park and Beach, Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. For a European like me, that was quite special. Thank you, Brian, for putting up the photos and screenshots of that episode on the GSM show notes. Well, you're welcome for providing them. Furthermore, I like history, cultures, and people's roots. So in that sense, The Brightest Star fulfilled all my wishes. In this money episode, Harry Mudd was portrayed as he should be, manipulative, lying, erratic, and funny. So kudos to the actor Rainn Wilson, who had a great go at the Maslany effect here. Orphan Black reference. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, like the dance scene from Orphan Black, that was one of the, there was a similar thing. The twist that Harry was not Harry himself could have been expected, but I didn't see it coming. So that was a very nice special twist then, and I have to admit, I didn't see it coming either. The reference to the 1967 I'm Mudd TOS Season 2 Episode 8 is great. I rewatched that TOS episode, and the funny thing I noticed is that as soon as 4 or even 6 Alices can be seen, the camera shot gets very blurry, probably to hide that they use stand-in doubles for the twins, Alice and Ray Andrees. When you look on IMDb, you can see that they used 4 sets of twins for this episode, 1 male and 3 female ones. Those were other times than the Maslany era. Yeah, definitely. Greetings, Fred from the Netherlands. And he provided a picture that I thought was interesting. He shows, what was the name of that? Was it Eve? Alice, of course. There's a picture with 6 Alices. And yeah, I can see that the ones that are like to the side of Harry are, like, you can see clearly, but the other 4, you can't see their faces as clearly. So I guess that's how they did it. And then, of course, he provides a picture of the, how many are in there? You see at least, oh, I didn't notice. There's one Mudd that is on the ground that's wearing the same costume as one of the other ones. So that there's multiples in there.
Yeah.
But there's at least seven. Yeah. In that one picture.
And the, what's his, the one guy, his arm is down by his feet.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Look at that. And now mind you, the two that are kind of facing the wall, those may not be, actual Harry Mudd's or actual Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson.
Because if you look at the one on the left, it looks shorter than the one on the right to me.
Well, that could be perspective, though.
It could be.
Like a perspective.
It could be.
Off thing, whatever. But yeah. Well, I mean, technically, the one that's laying on the ground, I guess the one that's wearing the same outfit is sitting on him.
Didn't notice that, but yeah, he is.
And so technically that's probably also not Rainn Wilson. So really only 1, 2, 3, 4 in the exact same shot.
Regardless, it was an amazing shot. And the guy that's sitting on the other guy that's wearing the same, that was probably the most jovial of the androids. Cause I noticed how he would like raise his arm up and I would have Jippers on a beach somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And then they all turn around and decided, Jippers on a beach. Yep. Hey, I think I'm pretty sure, even though you can't tell in this particular screen grab, I'm pretty sure that at one point in time, most of them are facing.
I'm sure you're right. Yeah.
It's facing the front, I should say.
Yeah. Although maybe not the one that's on the ground, but.
No, not that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if the two in the back ever turn around, actually. It seems like they did, though.
I think they did because I remember seeing more than just those four. Mm-hmm. There were four faces. I remember seeing several. Yeah, but I mean, what else can be said? It was brilliant. Yeah, so
no, they never turn around.
Yeah, so the thing that actually, I didn't realize Fred didn't mention this, but I had it in the comments to mention here, although I already kind of started mentioning it. The attire that Mudd was wearing in iMudd was a blue shirt with epaulettes on it. And we see one of those androids wearing a very similar shirt. So, and, you know, there was all sorts of crazy things in his ship as well.
And yeah, those two never turn around.
No, they don't?
Mm-mm.
Well, I know the one on the ship, there were many more than just the seven, so.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
It's so funny.
We've got one more bit of feedback.
Okay, Glynis says, again, I enjoyed this one. Very clever and cunning to dupe his captors. I need a few of those clones / androids around to do the menial tasks. We sure got our small Trekkie fix while waiting for the main Star Trek Discovery to kick off again.
That we did.
I know. I could go for duplicity style copies or something.
I definitely could.
Go do this.
Yeah. In fact, I've dreamt of that many times that would be perfect, but they have to be subservient to you to make it really worth your while, because if they're independent, then, you know, what's the point? Then they'll say, heck with you.
Yeah. I don't want to do the crap jobs.
Yeah. So
that's why I created you.
I wrote down a few other notes from this. The same guy, actually, from this, Harry Judge, he was also the actor that played the previous Tellarite that we saw in season one, who played, that was Admiral Gorch. And I guess he was part of Admiral Cornwell's retinue. And we also see that same Gorch character in the Mirror Universe on the planet, you know, the Rebel base. So that was interesting. I wonder if we're going to see this USS DeMilo on Lower Decks, because Mike McMahon was the one that wrote it. So I wonder if that's the ship. Apparently, it's a Hoover class ship. It was very difficult to make that out. I don't know who determined that, but according to Memory Alpha, it is listed as Hoover class. So, and there were a couple of Hoover class, the Dana, USS Dana, and the USS Edison that were at the Battle of the Binary Stars, of course. I also wrote down that Mudd is wanted by the Federation for 30 counts of smuggling. And I guess these were attached to him after magic to make the sanest man go mad. 20 counts of attempted homicide. 1 count of attempted regicide, which, yeah, which he says hardly counts because it was a duke.
It was a duke.
And then transportation of stolen goods, which I think was mentioned in TOS. And then, of course, 1 count of penetrating a space whale.
Poor. Maybe that's why it got the TVMA.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, man. He's right, though. If it was a duke, then it can't be attempted regicide.
Yeah, because that's just for king or queen, right? Or is that?
Yep.
Yeah.
It is not all royalty. Regicide is strictly the monarch.
Yeah. And I mentioned the Mona Lisa. And also, we see one of those, I don't know what to call them, but I call them screen heads. Remember, there was on the Shenzhou, there was one bridge officer that when the Klingon ship decloaked, she said, "Impossible." And, you know, she had like her visor or whatever had red alert on it. We saw one of these on the DeMilo. So hopefully we'll get to find out more about that and who they are. All right. Do you have anything else that you want to bring up for this episode or?
No, I don't think so. Other than just, I was tickled pink.
All right. Well, we only have one bit. I wrote a few things down, but I'm going to save those for our roundtable. But there is one bit of news that I want to highlight this time because I have not heard it mentioned any of the other websites or podcasts yet. So I'm going to just play the shipwide announcement for the news. And that is about After Trek. Okay, so I've been digging about that. Now, back in June, it had been announced that it was being reimagined. It was not said that it had been canceled. In fact, I went back to those articles to reread them. That it had been reimagined for season 2. Well, apparently, as of, I don't know when it was done, within the last couple of weeks anyway, CBS All Access removed After Trek, and you can't even play it anymore now. And it's also removed from Amazon Prime channels. Like if you have CBS All Access in your Amazon Prime, you can't access it either. Now, before our Canadian and international listeners point out, hey, I can still access After Trek. Yes, you can. It has not been removed from Netflix and it has not been removed from Crave TV, but it is not available in the US anymore. So, and I do have some other information about that. Matt Mira, who was the host of After Trek, he had mentioned on a recent podcast of his Star Trek The Next Conversation, he said that he wasn't coming back to the show. Now, he also does a Patreon with his co-host, Andrew Secunda. And I am a member of the Patreon, so I got to listen to that. And around 44 minutes in, he says that he had thoughts of doing his own After Trek style podcast in audio form, bringing the guests on to talk about it. But he's not really sure if he can legally do that, but he said that After Trek is not coming back at the outset of season 2 of Discovery. Like, he doesn't know, maybe it'll come back at some point as end of season 2 or for Picard, but that he's not under contract at this time. He said he'd be thrilled to come back for Picard or whatever they would need him to do whenever they need him to do it. but that he doesn't know of any plans for the show to return. In fact, one, this is not about that, but one interesting tidbit that he mentioned in that same episode, that he didn't officially get the job as host until the Thursday before hosting it the following Sunday. So if I know a lot of us, and myself included, found that especially that first couple of episodes were pretty rough. Well, now we know why, because he basically had no time to prepare. Basically 4 days to come to New York and host a show. So, you know, under the circumstances, I think he did all right. But, and he implied in that same episode that, well, he didn't say straight out, but he implied that the budget overruns from season two that were in part cost the previous showrunners, Aaron Harberts and Gretchen J. Berg, their jobs, probably cost him his job with After Trek. So it's been said before. I remember Mark Decote mentioned it on the last roundtable. These first few episodes better really be good, because supposedly they spent a lot of money on them. So anyway, that's the one thing I wanted to get out there, just to let people know After Trek is not coming on. I imagine they're going to have the little features. Maybe they'd be on YouTube. They'll probably just be available to CBS All Access, because that seems how they do it, but we'll see. Maybe they'll make them available on YouTube. But that's it. All right. So there's, of course, a lot more news to cover, and we'll cover it all in our next roundtable, which we're going to record a roundtable, if everything goes well, Friday night. We're recording this on Tuesday. So
hopefully, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So that should come to you before the season premiere Thursday. And we are probably going to do it Friday nights. Is that what we agreed on? I think so. Yeah. So that basically means get your feedback in as soon as you can. And if you don't get your feedback in by, you know, Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, just get it in when you can, and we will cover whatever feedback that you have the following week. So we'd rather play the feedback or, you know, read the feedback in a subsequent episode than not cover it at all, because your feedback is very important to us, and it's a big part of our podcast. So just get it in. We don't care when. We'll play it whenever we get it, or read it whenever we get it. Yep. To submit your feedback and connect with us, there are many different ways. First way is the feedback form at goldenspowermedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. Use the SpeakPipe widget that you'll see on there. You can also call 304, and the form there where you can submit text. You can call the feedback line for GSM, and that's at 304-837-2278. Make sure you indicate that you're calling about the Star Trek Discovery podcast. You can email us directly. We've been getting voicemails from various people that way, and that's at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. You can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. That's where we get most of our feedback. That's at facebook.com/group/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Our Twitter is also StarTrekGSM. And help get the word out. Share us, retweet us, especially when we post that the new episode is out. I usually post the episodes when they come out on our Facebook group and on other Facebook Star Trek Discovery Facebook groups that allow it. So, and usually on the Golden Spire Media Facebook page, that one you can share. But anytime you see us post about an episode, please share it. And also, don't forget that you can find us on the TV Time app. And I know that our recent episodes have not been on there, but when the show comes back, you will be seeing our episodes for each of the Star Trek Discovery episodes, because we are the exclusive podcast for Star Trek Discovery on TV Time. And you can leave us feedback there by commenting on the episode post when you see the podcast there. you can support us by, if you use Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us. That is supposedly the best way to get our apple juice, so to speak, and move us up in the crystal ball or the Ouija board that is the ratings of how Apple does its podcast ratings.
Apple juice.
I thought of that. I had to use that. But anyway, if you use any kind of podcast app that allows ratings and reviews, give us a rating review, hopefully a 5-star, and help us get the word out, because there's a lot of us, a lot of Star Trek Discovery podcasts out there, and we want to not be at the bottom of the barrel. But anyway, other ways you can support the network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And we're kind of on a break right now, but I also do another podcast for The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead that I used to do with Ruthie. And that is The Walking Dead Talk Through. And that comes back in February. But until then, I am all Star Trek Discovery all the time. And I am very happy about that, I'll tell you. I cannot wait for this season. All right. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.